Okay, now on to 22-126, regards to Reza De La Cruz, DBM. Tracy, if you'd leave.
Case 22-126, the complainant is Janet Schmidt. The respondent is Reza De La Cruz, DBM, on November 12, 2021, Canada. An 8-year-old female border collie mix was presented to respondent for a dental procedure. The dog was anesthetized and dental radiographs were performed. After reviewing the radiographs, respondent evaluated the dog's mouth and contacted complainant with her findings and recommendations. During respondent's phone conversation with complainant, technical staff proceeded with scaling the dog's teeth. At this time, the dog jumped off the dental table without warning. Staff attempted to catch the dog, but the dog struck the floor. The dog was placed back on the dental table and stabilized when respondent returned. Respondent was advised of the incident. She extracted the tooth and the dental procedure was completed. The dog was placed in recovery. After extubation, the dog was panting heavily and slowly becoming cyanotic. The dog was placed on oxygen and was closely monitored. Complainant was contacted and advised that they needed to monitor the dog further before discharge. She was advised that the dog had rolled off the side of the dental table and the dog was now ataxic. When complainant arrived to pick up the dog, she elected to transfer the dog to an emergency facility for monitoring. The following day, the dog was transferred to a neurologist where she was diagnosed with traumatic C4-5 vertebral luxation with extensive spinal cord edema and focal intramedullary hemorrhage, as well as a tetraplegia with impaired diaphragmatic innervation and ventilation. And the committee concluded that possible violations of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred, and it was moved and seconded. The board finds ERS 32-22-32-11 gross negligence for allowing the pet to jump slash fall off the dental table, which led to the dog's injury. The motion was approved with a vote of 3-0.
Okay, thank you. We do not have the complainant in this case, but we do have Mr. Stoll here.
Yes, ma'am, thank you.
Thank you, go ahead.
The committee found that medically everything that Dr. De La Cruz did in connection with this dental procedure was appropriate. Specifically, she pre-medicated Panda with Serenia, hydromorphone, and other medications that were standard of care, and then an IV catheter was placed and Panda was induced with propofol and intubated at 9:30 a.m. Staff then hooked Panda up to monitoring equipment, and the technicians began the process of full mouth radiographs. At 10 o'clock a.m., Dr. De La Cruz began to probe Panda's mouth to check for pockets and confirm the findings of the radiographs. Approximately 10 to 15 minutes after the probing had begun, Dr. De La Cruz stepped away from the dental table to an adjacent room to call the owner to discuss her findings and make recommendations for further care, including dental extractions. She did exactly what she was supposed to do, and nothing she did up to this point in time fell below the standard of care in any way. While Dr. De La Cruz was on the phone with the owner, Panda suddenly and unexpectedly woke up from anesthesia and fell off the dental table, supposedly feet first, for the technicians who were present. Panda was then immediately picked up, her ET tube was secured, and an additional propofol medication was given. The technician reattached the monitoring equipment, all while Dr. De La Cruz was still on the phone with the owner in the other room. By the time she returned to the dental table, Dr. De La Cruz was told of the incident and Panda had already been stabilized. She then rechecked the patency of the ET tube, physically examined Panda, and continued with the procedure as planned. After the procedure, the owner was fully informed of what had happened, and at this time there was no evidence of any neurological or other injuries. When neurological complications did develop, Dr. De La Cruz, the practice, and their insurance carrier agreed to cover all the subsequent veterinary medical expenses and reimburse the owner for the cost of the procedures. Unfortunately, the reimbursement, including the involved multiple parties and took much longer than anticipated, and that's what prompted the owner to file this complaint. Shortly after the complaint was filed, but not in response to the complaint, Petco and Dr. De La Cruz insurance carrier paid the complainant and various other veterinary facilities over $65,000 to reimburse them and cover all the costs and expenses of all parties. They also, all the parties entered into a global settlement agreement. We therefore don't feel that any further action is necessary in this matter and disagree with the committee's suggestion that Dr. Dela Cruz was grossly negligent in this matter. Basically, the committee said that because the dog fell off the table, Dr. Dela Cruz had to be negligent. Legally, that argument is flawed because the committee failed to identify a specific act that Dr. Dela Cruz performed or failed to perform that fell below the standard of care. They couldn't identify a single specific act because everything she did was appropriate and in compliance with the standard of care. The pre-medication and anesthetic protocols were appropriate, and it was not below the standard of care for Dr. Dela Cruz to leave the room to call the owner to get authorization for the dental extraction and other services. That is standard of care, and the dog was not left unattended. There were technicians there to monitor. And that's standard of care for dental procedures. The committee's report is silent as to a specific negligent act and simply says that she was potentially grossly negligent for allowing the dog to jump off the table. In other words, they're saying that simply because the dog fell off the table, it had to be the result of something that Dr. Dela Cruz did that fell below the standard of care. We disagree, and in the absence of a specific act that constituted malpractice or negligence, the proposed violation is not legally supported or sustainable. We therefore request that the complaint be dismissed. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Dave. Dr. Nosley, you are the lead on this one.
Okay. In this tragic case, I would agree with Mr. Stoll that the financial aspects are not our concern here, but we need to focus in on the respondent and her actions in this case. And I have a lot of questions. I have questions regarding the anesthesia and the anesthesia monitoring. When the event occurred, there is a video and some discussion of whether we need to see that video or not. I have concerns regarding the doctor's involvement in supervising the anesthesia monitoring. I have questions regarding the details of the actual incident. I have questions regarding the after procedure, the monitoring and evaluation of the patient afterwards. And so with these questions that I think need to be asked and answered and discussed, I would make a motion to move this case to informal.
Second.
Okay. A motion and a second to move case 22-126 to an informal. All those in favor say.
Madam Chair.
Yes, sorry.
Sorry.
Further discussion.
For discussion. Is there any way we can obtain that video?
Well, that's if the board thinks that would be helpful to see that video.
I think it would definitely be helpful because we have conflicting reports from some technicians. One lady
very
said it did fall on its head.
Very conflicting.
Yeah.
Anesthetized dog jumped off the table feet first.
Right, yeah.
Okay. May I be heard?
Yeah.
On that, I tried to get a copy of the video and provide it to you.
Yeah.
And Petco was told that they needed a subpoena in order to provide it, and I'm not capable or allowed under the rules to issue a subpoena.
Mr. Hare,
we can
have to do that.
Yes.
So does that require a motion?
It would.
Okay. I would make a motion that we ask counsel to
It would just be the board.
The board to subpoena for the video.
Second.
Okay. Any further discussion?
Now we have two motions out there. Okay. We have the original motion and the second, and now we have a second motion and a second.
You're right.
So
before we vote on the
okay,
original.
Sorry. Those are two separate.
A little out of
okay.
Okay.
So let's first vote on sending it to an informal.
Okay.
Okay.
Second.
So all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed?
Nay.
Okay. Motion passes, and now the
motion
to
subpoena
the video from PetSmart.
Second.
Second, any further discussion on that? Okay.
I believe it's Petco, isn't it?
Or Petco,
yes.
Sorry.
Yes.
Okay. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Okay, motion carries.
I do have a question. I don't know. Do we know if any of the technicians that were there when Dr. Dela Cruz was out were certified or are certified, or were they all assistants?
I believe the lead was.
Yeah.
The head, the actual person in charge of the dental was an experienced certified.
She submitted a statement.
And she submitted a statement, the other one was just an assistant.
So I guess the question I have then is, because the doctor was out, even though the doctor's in charge of the case, if there's a certified technician that was present during the incidents, is there a case that he'd be open against that technician?
I agree. There are some, as Jane said, a lot of conflicting statements here. Certified technician, when do we hold people responsible for their actions?
Yeah.
If they're certified, I agree, Dr.
The fall evidently happened 30 minutes into a 3-hour procedure.
It's probably closer to an hour, but yeah, somewhere in that 30 minutes to an hour.
I have a concern about that also.
Okay.
And that your questions, please, for the informal.
Definitely, the informal.
So do we want to open a case? I don't know whether the appetite is on that or what, but I guess make a motion to open a case against, I gotta find the name now. Everybody has it off the top of their head. Let me look through these responses.
Susan, I can't remember.
I said, look through the responses here real quick. Is that Susan Lucy?
Yeah, I believe that's right.
She signed it as hospital operations manager, but she has a CBT then? Or am I missing someone else?
Yeah, no, that was her.
That's her.
Okay, so make a motion to open a case against Susan Lucy, CBT.
Second.
Okay, motion and a second to open a case against the CBT who is present. Any further discussion? Okay, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Okay, motion passes to open the case. So now we are moving down to 22-127 in regards to Scott Dispin, DVM. Tracy, if you'll read the case summary.
Yes, case 22-127, the defendant is Amber Webster, and the respondent is Scott Dispin, DVM. On May 3rd, 2022, Oakley, an 8-month-old female Labrador retriever, was presented to respondent for a spay procedure. According to complainant, she was escorted into an exam room for a pre-surgical evaluation. Respondent forcefully muzzled the dog and dragged her onto the scale. The dog was taken to the back and the spay procedure was performed. The dog was discharged later that day to complainant. No concerns were mentioned. 2 days later, complainant called to report the dog was limping, which she attributed to respondent roughly handling the dog during the pre-surgical exam. Respondent and his staff did not observe the dog limping at any point. The committee concluded that no violation of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred, and it was moved and seconded the board to dismiss this issue with no violation. The motion was approved with a vote of 3-0.
Okay, thank you, Tracy. We do not have the respondent or complainant in this case, and we've got Dr. James as the lead.
Yeah, this is going to be a tough case to review without having the complainant or the respondent available to kind of talk about what happened, but I mean, from what was submitted, I'm kind of more inclined to believe that the respondent sensed that there were some behavior issues in this dog that required the muzzle. I think it's very appropriate to ask an owner to place a muzzle on the dog. I think there's you do need to tighten these down. Dogs are great at getting these off, and that can sometimes look like you're choking them or you're pulling too hard, but they need to be that way. As for forcibly putting on the scale, I mean, I don't see anything there that makes me jump up and down as to the handling of this dog. And what I would also say is there was no lameness immediately after, which if something had happened during the procedure, I would have expected it to show up before 2 days later. So I at this point, I would make a motion that we support the findings of the investigative committee and have find no violations in 22-127.
Yeah, the only thing I would say is what you said about the lameness. We don't know what the lameness was, and it was an 8-month-old Labrador with 4-leg lameness. There are a lot of possibilities there.
It's a Labrador.
It's a Labrador.
And it's an aggressive 8-month-old. I don't agree with aggression. Like that's never going to be the fault of the veterinarian. You raise this dog wrong, it's something wrong with the dog. I'm not going to fault a veterinarian for trying to keep themselves safe, ever. It's not our job.
I still think you need to handle it correctly, but I don't think placing a muzzle was handled incorrectly, I guess is what I'm saying.
I don't think this was handled incorrectly, no.
I mean, now if you're kicking the dog because of its behavior, that's a different issue.
Everybody slamming onto the scale. If you're lifting it to the scale because it doesn't want to go, that's not manhandling.
Yeah, I agree.
I think owners can easily be offended seeing that their dog needs muzzle. And then it looks, you know, any dog in a muzzle looks kind of.
And the owner didn't say anything at the time about the handling of the dog, which also, if you really felt like your dog was handled inappropriately, you would think it would have come up.
Reading all the stuff that there was, Ms. Frost, reading all the stuff that was submitted, I would suggest there was more matter with the, more things wrong with the owner than was the dog or the veterinarian.
Okay, so we have a motion and a second to dismiss case 22-127. There's no further discussion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, motion passes. Case 22-127 is dismissed. Moving on to 22-129 in regards to Caitlin Wilson, DVM. Tracy, the caseload, please.
Case 22-129, the complainant is Jessica McFarland. The respondent is Caitlin Wilson, DVM. On August 13th, 2021, Benson, a 4-year-old male chihuahua mix, was presented to respondent on emergency for being acutely damaged. Evaluation revealed the dog was paraplegic and deep pain negative from the pelvic lungs. Respondent discussed her findings with complainant and the guarded prognosis. She recommended transferring the dog to a neurologist for diagnostics and possible surgery. However, even with surgery, the dog had a 50-50 chance of regaining function in the pelvic limbs. Complainant expressed financial constraints and reached out to Fraser for financial assistance. Respondent discussed at length complainant's options and answered all of her questions. Ultimately, complainant elected humane euthanasia. Complainant felt respondent coerced her into euthanizing the dog, refused to allow her to take the dog home or seek a second opinion. Respondent denies the allegation. And the committee concluded that possible violations of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred. And it was moved and seconded the board find ARS 3222-3212 as it relates to R311-5011 for failure to provide considerate treatment to the pet owner for not offering other options available for the treatment of the dog, and ARS 3222-3218 as it relates to R311-502F. Failure to document that the verbal approval of the dog's euthanasia was witnessed by one other individual. The motion was approved with vote of 3-0.
Okay, please note that just this morning we received some additional information from Dr. Wilson. It's on the cloud and in your packet. I don't know if anybody has had the chance to read through it yet.
It's dated today.
It's dated today, yes. But regardless, I don't know if Dr. Jane, you're the case lead. Do you want to take a moment to read it or?
Yes.
Okay, so let's take a couple moments to read it.
Have quite a few questions about the other options that were discussed with this owner. You know, I certainly agree that in a dog that's got no deep pain, the prognosis is really poor, and giving that to an owner can be very difficult. I mean, as far as the owner understanding that this is such a poor prognosis. But that doesn't mean that the owner shouldn't be given the options for other things if they wanted to try, because I think what happens is they make this decision and then they have no closure because they feel like, if I had tried, would it have worked? And there are cases that it does work. So it's not common that it does, but I think we have seen medical management in some of these cases improve, and maybe it would have given her enough time to find additional financing or whatever, you know. So to me, it was more around what were the other options discussed for this dog, because it sounded like to me that it's either you go to the neurologist or we euthanize. And even in the statement today, it says, I discussed medical management, but I wouldn't have recommended that. It wasn't something that she would have recommended the other two over medical management, which is fine. That's her call, but I don't know how well that was discussed.
Yeah, but I mean, it's up to the doctor to make a judgment call of would this be an appropriate case. I mean, you have deep pain absent. You're not just going to give rest and steroids. They're not going to recover from that. And if we don't have surgery done immediately, most cases show that long-term ischemic injury of the spinal cord is going to result in long-term paralysis after surgery anyway. So she may have talked about medical management, but I may not have recommended it either. And it's not the veterinarian's job to be a clearinghouse to say, here, these are the options. If you want to do some kind of woo-woo medicine, I have to authorize that. So I understand what you're saying, but I don't think we can hold a veterinarian to a violation for making a referral to a neurologist and saying, I'm not comfortable doing anything else. I mean, that's within the veterinarian's wheelhouse, in my opinion.
Well,
I mean, I agree that you can ask questions, but if we're going on, oh, well, you could have given Pred and seen what happened to this dog, that may not be an appropriate treatment course. I don't think anyone has suggested that.
What I'm saying is that there was discussion around getting a second opinion, getting, you know, another, whether from a neurologist or whether from just another veterinarian. And could you have given meds to allow that to happen so that the owner could get some closure and feel more comfortable with the fact that she was making this decision? And I don't feel like that was offered. And I do feel it is the responsibility of the veterinarian to try and give a full range of options that meet the client where they're at. This is not about, oh, you can't do a neurologist appointment, so euthanasia is the only thing we're going to do. Like, that we've got to get out of that mentality and start trying to meet people where they are. And I feel like that did not happen in this case, which is more what I wanted to ask about than anything else. I'm not saying it would have changed the outcome or that this dog didn't have a poor prognosis. I think
but
it did.
In the position of the veterinarian, if, I mean, again, this is maybe a question and discussion for that, but if it would have prolonged suffering for no reason, I mean, that's not something I'm willing to do as a veterinarian. If I'm told that I have to do that by a board, that's a problem too. So I understand the questions. I just want to make sure we're kind of not going down a dangerous path of you have to do everything every time. I mean, why didn't we offer acupuncture?
Well, why don't we ask? I guess that's my question.
But I just want to be careful
about.
Let's
ask these questions.
There's a potential violation on there, and I want to be very, very careful about you have to do everything every single time, no matter how comfortable you are as a veterinarian, just for the sake that you're a veterinarian. And so I think
I'll
we have to
leave
with the judgment.
I'll make a motion that we move 22-129 to an informal.
Okay. A motion and a second to move case 22-129 to an informal. Any further discussion?
I think this veterinarian was totally appropriate in her actions. I don't believe there was coercion here to euthanize this pet. The ultimate decision was the pet owner saying, wait a minute, no, I'm going to try everything. Then that's up to them. And she said, I didn't tell her she couldn't take the dog. And taking the dog home, I agree that's a problem. You have to express their bladder. This dog is not going to respond. But you have to express their bladder. They're in pain. Immediate referral to an emergency. Okay, I'm fine with that, but taking it home and see what happens, I'm not comfortable with that at all. So I think she was just trying to impress upon this owner, this is a bad prognosis. And this isn't a matter of just a wait and see thing. I think that there may have been some other things in the owner's mind regarding her decision to euthanize in terms of how she might even be able to handle a case like this. So I don't think she was coerced, and I think that the young veterinarian did a pretty good job.
I agree. I had to wonder, you know, as a pet parent, while I understand that dog was in a terrible situation, if I was going to euthanize, you know, maybe even if this owner had had one more night, say, like, take your pet home, you know, spend one more, you know, night with them, and then we could schedule it for, you know, the next day or something. I don't know if that's, you
that's
know.
An option, but in this case, we've got a back pain dog.
That's just pain. That's who can't, another day of pain.
Back pain dog who can't urinate.
And I don't think that anybody would, I don't know that anyone's advocating that you take the dog home and do nothing, but this is a young veterinarian, and this owner had a right to get a second opinion. And they could have taken it to another private practice and gotten in somewhere that day, and maybe, and gotten a second opinion to feel more comfortable with the results. That is my concern in this case. And I'm not saying this doctor did or did not do it. She's not here. I can't ask her the questions. Right. What I'm saying is this owner deserved on a four-year-old dog to be able to get a second opinion. I would get a second opinion if it was my dog.
She was by law.
That's what we don't know, because it says complainant felt coerced and she refused to allow her to take the dog home.
No, coercion and regret are two different things, and they get confused a lot.
But or seek a second opinion. I feel like we need to understand a little bit more about whether she offered getting a second opinion in the dog. And unless somebody has it in here that I didn't see, then I would like to ask those questions.
Yes. I agree. So and in the IC, the respondent stated that it was against medical advice to take the dog home. So there was it wasn't coercion, but that's a fairly strong statement.
Well, it's our job to advocate against pain and suffering. Yeah.
That's pretty standard.
It was also medical advice to
go to
they had to have surgery right away.
Yeah.
Right.
Which have been the only option.
That's the same as against medical advice to leave the hospital.
Yeah.
That's the same. Mm-hmm. It didn't prevent her. She could have walked out anytime she wanted.
Yeah, she had the option of taking the dog for an opinion no matter what. I mean, the veterinarian didn't.
So I'm going to throw this in there to kind of side with Dr. Osley on this, and kind of so you know what my vote's going to be on the informal. The complainant was noticed and did not appear. So that says something.
Okay, so we have a motion and a second to move case 22-129 to an informal. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Nay.
Give me a roll call.
Okay.
Dr. Byrne?
Aye.
Ms. Greger?
Nay.
Ms. Frost?
Nay.
Dr. James is an aye. Mr. Lohe?
Nay.
Dr. Nosley?
Nay.
Ms. Solomon?
Aye.
Dr. Wright?
Nay.
The nays have it.
We'll make an alternative motion.
Okay. Different motion, either a letter or case dismissed.
I'll make a motion to dismiss with no violation.
Second.
Okay. A motion and a second to dismiss case 22-129. There's no further discussion. Let's do roll call again.
Dr. Byrne?
Aye.
Ms. Krieger?
Aye.
Ms. Frost?
Aye.
Dr. James is a nay. Mr. Lohe?
Aye.
Dr. Nosley?
Aye.
Ms. Solomon?
Nay.
Dr. Wright?
Aye.
Thank you.
So case 22-129 is dismissed. Let's see, are you guys okay with finishing the last two, or does anyone need a bathroom break? Okay.
So far, so good.
Carry on then. Mm-hmm. Number 22-134 in regards to Linnea Warlick, DVM. Tracy, if you'll read the case summary, please.
Case 22-134, the complainant is Susan Ash, the respondent is Linnea Warlick, DVM. On October 11, 2021, Wildfire, a 15-year-old male quarter horse, was presented to respondent due to a laceration on the left front password. After evaluation, respondent's findings were consistent with cellulitis and diagnostics were recommended. Complainant declined. Respondent explained that cellulitis required aggressive care. Complainant reluctantly agreed to 24 hours hospitalization. The following day, respondent noted that the edema had decreased, but continued hospitalization was recommended. Complainant declined and agreed to have the horse rechecked on October 15, 2021. on October 13, 2021, complainant advised respondent's premises that the horse's limb was more swollen. Respondent was not working that day, therefore staff requested complainant submit photographs of the horse's limb. Complainant did not send pictures until the following day and did not show up for her scheduled appointment on October 15th. On October 13th, 2021, Dr. Blee provided a house call evaluation of the horse. Diagnostics were performed and treatment was provided. Dr. Blee continued providing care and treatment of the horse until October 18th, 2022. On October 18th, 2021, sorry, that should have been 2021. On October 18th, 2021, the horse presented to Chaparral Veterinary Medical Center for hospitalization for supportive care. On January 10th, 2022, the horse's treating veterinarian at Chaparral contacted respondent to ask if she could prescribe Daytrile for the horse. Respondent agreed and complainant picked up the medication. A short time later, respondent realized there was a typo on the prescription label and immediately contacted complainant to pick up the additional medication needed. The committee concluded that no violation of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred, and it was moved and seconded the board dismissed this issue with no violation. The motion was approved with a vote of 5-0.
Okay, thank you. We have no complainant and no respondent. And Dr. Byrne, you are the lead.
Yes, after reviewing the case, it's kind of an interesting case just because there's, I think the horse had two different problems, and I think it was seen by three different practices. For those two different problems that were sequentially, the second, I think, sequentially developed from the first. The primary being a laceration to the lower limb that was 11-9 that was seen by the initial one of the respondent in this case. That was managed, I think, appropriately. I think the limb swelling did make an improvement overnight, probably because of the pressure bandage. She'd given a dose of XC, which is a long-acting cephalosporin, which we typically give 4 days apart and followed by a week. Kind of an antibiotic choice that you would use on as a preventative or, you know, as a lacerator, and not a real active infection, more of a preventative type antibiotic dose. And it's basically used because the dosing regimen is more simple than required daily treatment. When she removed the horse from the vet clinic in Flagstaff and took it home, she didn't come back to the follow-up appointment. And in the interim time, she had seen another veterinarian from a central Arizona clinic who had continued to work up the lower limb issue by taking some radiographs, and I would assume agreed with the antibiotic choice at the time and redosed the XCEED. There was some blood work that was pulled on that day. As this limb continued to swell and the horse became more lame because of the compartmental syndrome from the cellulitis, it was referred ultimately to the Valley, to a referral hospital, I think primarily because the veterinarian in case number two was going to have some surgery of their own. So the laceration is one issue, the pigeon fever, the coronary bacterium infection is a second separate issue that I think was developing subclinically at the initial onset, because the initial blood work actually was negative for that on the titers. And that's a pretty common disorder, and they kind of have to coalesce and form. They're usually a well-organized abscess that's pretty well encapsulated, difficult to probably be visualized by the bloodstream, so you would expect the blood work to be fairly normal initially. So, and then the third issue was the fact that the veterinarian in Phoenix had prescribed extra label use of Baytrol for the horse, and they were using a compounded medication from Kentucky that came in 3.5 gram packets, powder. And they asked the veterinarian, the initial veterinarian, to kind of stopgap a lack of coverage where they awaited the second shipment of that from Kentucky. And then they had made the prescription of the liquid, I believe liquid Baytrol or Imipramine. And I think that's where the 3.5 mils was transferred from a 3.5 gram packet. So it is an inaccuracy in the dose. Your dose is correct, not correct, but it's actually low. And I don't think it would have really affected the outcome of the case. So I would make a motion to agree with the investigative committee's finding and make a recommendation for dismissal.
Okay. A motion and a second to dismiss case 22-134. Any further discussion?
Okay. I would just, Dr. Brown, correct me if I'm wrong, but pigeon fever is a sanitation issue. Isn't it not? I mean, if you check room was clean and taken care of, you wouldn't get pigeon fever. Or your premises.
Or you could, yeah, that's hard to say. But I mean, it's more of a contamination type of an injury. I don't think it was primarily from the laceration.
But that's how it enters, isn't it?
Possibly. Or it could be oral nasal or contaminant. Doesn't need to be introduced through a wound. Could have had it. Brewing.
Yeah.
I've had cases of pigeon fever that present as, they don't present classically with a big ventral dorsal abscess on their chest, you know, like a abscess underneath their scapula, you know, as a lameness, you know, that usually surgical debridement is usually the, and drainage is a treatment of all the antibiotics.
Do you need the antibiotics like an enrofloxacin or a cephalosporin?
You usually need something that's pretty strong with pigeon fever because it's so well encapsulated. It forms a real...
You gotta get inside there, okay.
Yeah, penetration is an issue.
Okay, we've got a motion and a second to dismiss. There's no further discussion. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Okay, case 22-134 is dismissed. Finish up our last one here. 22-135 regards to Carter Neal DVM. Tracy, please read the case summary.
Case 22-135, the complainant is Janice Reynolds, and the respondent is Carter Neal, DVM. On May 13, 2022, Little Bit, a 1.5-year-old spayed female English bulldog, was presented to respondent for a cherry eye procedure. Later that day, complainant received a call from the hospital staff reporting that an error was made, and respondent attempted to save the dog. Once in the abdomen, respondent realized that the dog was spayed. She closed the abdomen and tattooed the incision. The cherry eye was repaired and the dog recovered uneventfully. On May 16, 2022, complainant advised respondent that the spay incision was infected and sent a photo of the incision site. Complainant declined bringing the dog in for an exam, therefore respondent called in a prescription of cephalexin to a pharmacy of the complainant's choice. And the committee concluded that no violations of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred. It was moved and seconded the board dismissed this issue with no violation. The motion was approved with a vote of 4-1, with Mr. Almaraz opposed.
Okay, thank you. We do not have the complainant nor respondent present, and Ms. Frost, you are the lead.
Yes. So, reviewed the case, and I had a lot of questions, and I'm not sure, it just some of it seemed to get skipped over, I guess, when I was trying to understand the process of what happened. So in this case, two pets from the same family were presented. One pet for a spay, the other for a cherry eye procedure. And when you look at the paperwork that the practice has, you know, there's a form process that they go through with the client's information, what the pet's there for, even like referral information, all of that good stuff. It's on the same exact form as the preoperative exam. So super confused as to how, so the doctor was saying, look, I don't look at the paperwork, I just do the pre-op exam, you know, make sure, you know, the pet looks healthy for the procedure, and then I do the procedure. Well, that totally makes sense, except for they're on the same form. So it says cherry eye surgery there on the form that the owner authorized. Now the second page is the one that the team gets together, which is the actual anesthesia monitoring, which the team member, you can see, highlighted dog spay or DS, and nothing else is written as other. Again, they're like, well, we did the spay, but there was nothing there, which I've seen that happen before, because the pet was adopted, they didn't know. But then the cherry eye surgery was done, which wasn't written on the anesthesia form. So they're saying they figured it out afterwards when the owner informed them, no, the dog was already spayed, So I'm super confused as to what actually happened because these things aren't matching up. And where I get the errors happen, right? Bless you. There was conversation about like negligence and was there intent to do harm and you know, all of that. I didn't really follow, and I get the direction that they were going. But again, the stories don't match up. So then there was the comment that that these things have been fixed, right? They have a new process. The doctor reviews the consent, and now they have U of A vet students doing the pre-op exams, and they'll just ask her if she has questions. Well, I have a problem with that because if you're a vet student, you have to have direct supervision. So that makes, I'm like, oh, well, that's a whole other issue that I have a question about. And does that matter in this case? Is that a different case? I don't know. But I just have way too many questions to be like, yeah, I agree with this and, you know, move on. And while I don't think there was a intent there, and part of it looks like the complaint resulted because, you know, they didn't really see they got a discount. And I understand that was an admin thing. And they're upset about the tattoo and the incision, you know, line. We've seen this before with publicly owned animals, and you know, and where permission may not be a requirement. Apparently the general public doesn't love that, you know.
Except if there was a tattoo, then maybe this would have happened. Right, right. Anyway, so.
Yeah, I know. So you're kinda like, hey, if that would have been there, then I'd be like, oh, already stayed, right? So yeah, there's all kinds of pieces there. But so how the complaint like originated seemed more like maybe financial and a little bit cosmetic, and they understood, you know, there was an error. Again, I kind of feel like I just have questions. And maybe we come to the same conclusion, you know, that the investigative committee did. But I would make a motion to move it to an informal.
Yeah, I think this is one of those cases where we have a lot of these where the staff makes an error, and now who's responsible? And we're always, well, the respondent, are they responsible here? And in this case, yeah, the staff made an error and marked the dog as there to be spayed. The problem I have is the respondent saw the scar and just assumed, oh, it's a Frenchie, it's had a C-section, I'm going in there. Where I think at that point in time, the respondent could have said, wait a minute, I need a phone call. I need to look at the records, talk to some people. Are we supposed to be spaying this dog or not? Not just zipping open and assuming that it had a C-section. So that was my problem.
Yeah, sure, I get it. Well, and the dog was so young, too.
Yeah.
It was like, you know, it wasn't like an older rescue dog. Again, it was all on the right form for the pre-op exam. So that's where I was like, yeah. How did you not connect the dots? Now, there was a comment about 50 to 60, 70 surgeries a day. I'm like, whoa, that's a lot of surgeries, you know? And you must be really, really fast being able to do like 50 to 60 dog space.
I'd rather, if I had that many space, I'd rather not open
them. I was hoping I misinterpreted that the high volume was the reason for that mistake, because I don't think that's a great reason, you know?
Right.
But it was kind of cited, oh, well, it's high volume. Well, that doesn't change the standard of care. So, that's a lot, but I don't think it changes standard care. So I still think, I just have questions. And again, maybe we come to the same conclusion. I get, you know, get it, but for now.
No, I agree with Dr. Nosley, and mind you too, but yeah, I mean, we should have asked a couple questions.
Yeah.
So when you see something like that, I mean, I work with rescues too, and I've done that before. I'm like, well, I don't know, we might be spayed, but I'm gonna go in and we're gonna explore and find out, but that's our only option. We go into it knowing. If I'd have seen something, the first thing I'd have said was go back and look at the paperwork one more time, and we've seen spayed. I mean, on this intake form, it says we were previously spayed. So, they say if we would just
you still have a question, how about a phone call?
Yeah. So I agree. So I think it's good to move it forward. I mean, there are some questions. This is, I mean, thankfully, it's not worse than it was. But I mean, still, this could have been fixed before it even happened.
Right. Okay. So we have.
So I guess, do we really need an informal, or haven't we already talked about this stuff where we can just list and offer a consent agreement and that day be done with it?
I mean, it's right here, so I'm comfortable with that too.
Throwing that out there.
Yeah.
Is an informal going to yield any more than what you've already said? Okay, this is a problem.
I mean, the vet student thing kind of makes me a little bit concerned, though? Like, do we ask about that and see if we have to move forward on that? Like,
on which one?
Where the one of the fixes to keep this from happening is she's now reviewing paperwork, and the U of A vet students, they're doing the exams, and they'll just ask her if they have questions.
That'd be a different case.
I know, but so do we, like, whenever we get information on this case, would it be like, oh, yeah, that's not really what's happening? You know, I don't know.
Because it's like you need to know the discussion we had here, and it's always nice when they're here to hear these things, because we do give a lot of information just when we're talking to each other. We're really talking out there. I agree with Mr. Lowy, because when you see that intake form on May 13th, like I said, in the gray section number 4, has your pet had any surgery in the past? Spay is written on there, and yes. So, I mean, if it...
And the pre-op exam says spay okay, BAR, and I'm like, but it doesn't say, but you're on the same form.
So, like, I have enough information to move forward now, because I don't think any questions are really going to help anything. I think the education portion would be good too, though, so I'm cool either way. But I don't think we're going to get any more information. It's just more education.
But if you want to try the strat deal, then let's
questions,
go.
Let the maker of the motion decide. What do you think? Did we have a second?
No.
Okay. Because I think.
Oh, you made a motion to move it?
Yeah. And then I think you jumped
I'll
in.
Second it. I'll second that. I talked enough, so.
Okay.
Yes, you did.
So, would you like to vote on that, Nikki, or are you thinking?
I do on that.
Okay, so we have a motion and a second to move case 22-135 to an informal. With no further discussion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Nay.
Okay. 2 nays. So motion carries. We're going to move case 22-135 to an informal. Okay. So we're going to take like a 5-minute restroom break, and then when we come back, we'll start with Dr. Ford.
Yeah. Is that's not going to go.